Let's have an AA meeting. Can you guys hear me? Oh, you can. Alrighty.
Wow.
Testing. Check mic. Check mic.
I'm Mike.
Just one in every room. My name is Noelle, and I'm an alcoholic. And welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our own personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And now I get to do the best part of the night, which is introduce the speaker, who also happens to be my awesome sponsor. My nickname for her is actually Awesome Blossom. I don't know what my recovery would look like without her, but I can tell you that with her as my sponsor, my recovery is full of color and vibrancy, and it's built on the three legacies, and I'm pretty sure that's going to come through in her story tonight. And with that, I give you Lisa.
Thank you, Noelle. That was really sweet. My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic, a nervous-ass alcoholic. And I know we're not supposed to cuss, but, sorry, in advance. Okay. My sobriety date is September 26, 1993, and I got sober when I was 29. My maturity was kind of like a 12, 13-year-old. That's the age I was when I first started to drink or use. I know it's AA, but I've got outside issues in my story. And I'm glad there's a lot of newcomers here. I like carrying the message. I like carrying the message to newcomers. And, well, anybody, really. I'm from Miami, Florida. And I, let's see, my mom died when I was 2, and my dad remarried. I have 2 older brothers, and my stepmom had 3 kids, so it was 6 of us. I'm the baby. I'm still the baby. We had a pretty, like, middle-class family. We didn't really want for anything financially. It was a nice home. You know, food and clothes and vacations and all that. It looked really nice in pictures. The reality was a lot different. My stepmom was emotionally unavailable. That's kind of an understatement. She was unavailable, and my dad was a very hard worker. We're Jewish. Not that that makes any difference, but. So pretty much she stayed home and he went to work. And it was a lot of violence going on in the house, like behind all the pretty pictures and the vacations. My stepsister was really violent to me, very abusive to me and to her mom and grandmother. It was just a lot of dysfunction going on. I started drinking pretty young, like at get football dinners or Jewish dinners, things like that. I started out with like Moog and David and just kind of going in the liquor cabinet of my parents. And around 12, and I thought that was normal. And I actually thought that was normal for a lot of years into sobriety until I realized, like, that's a kid, that's a child, like, that's crazy as hell. But I grew up in the 70s, and my older brothers and a little bit my sister, they were experimenting with, you know, marijuana and stuff like that. So I was partaking in that. I was very, very insecure. looking at pictures, I was a really cute little girl, pretty cute little sweet. Well, not, I don't know about sweet, but I was a cute little kid, but my self-esteem was really low, really low. So a lot of my story contains self-medicating through sex and relationships. Well, not really. They weren't relationships in hindsight. It was just sex and imaginary boyfriends or girlfriends or whatever my choice was. So so I was very, it sounds kind of silly, but I had a big hole inside and I filled it with whatever worked. And what worked was drinking and some drugs and you know, trying to fill it with a boyfriend early on. And I was pretty well developed by like 11 or 12. So I looked older and I was looking for, you know, the wrong thing in the wrong places. And my stepmom, she already thought that I was doing things that I wasn't even doing, you know, with these boys. And so she was like kind of encouraging me to get on birth, almost condoning this promiscuous behavior. And I wasn't even quite there yet, but that didn't do a lot for my self-esteem, because even I knew better, like, you need to wait and this kind of thing. And she's like, you know, well, we need to take you to a doctor and make sure that you're prepared. And, you know, that didn't do a lot for my self-esteem at that point. So I did not, I swear this story gets happy. So I did not perform very well in school early on, because I thought I was stupid. And I had tutoring and just all this crazy stuff going on at my house. So I'm going to fast forward. So I kind of drank and drugged and whatever without getting in any trouble of any kind. From like 12 to 20, and then my brother, my oldest brother, who was my niece's here, his daughter, my favorite, offered me to move to Atlanta to get my life together, get straightened out, and so I did that. I moved up here. He helped me get in college. He's really instrumental in kind of parenting me, and trying to straighten me out in, you know, a lot of different ways. So I came up here and I did get into school. I did get into college, and I brought me with me. You know, a lot of people think you do that geographic cure. You know, you leave that person, you leave that family or that state or that job, or and you're going to be all better over there in the next place. And so I did that. And for a little while it was good like that, until I was still using the same coping skills, and started in with the trying to fill it up with a relationship thing, and then that got so painful for me. I mean, it got so painful for me, that whole relationship addiction, love addiction, that I got into. I did go to college, and I did get married. That's a small detail. I got married to this really nice guy, professional guy, when I was 23, and I was right about to like really burst out in addiction, and he was really normal, so I had to divorce him. He was a little boring for me, and that was kind of stupid, but that's where I was. I was 25 when I only stayed married a couple years, divorced Jimmy, and then decided to just go crazy. I mean, go crazy drinking, go crazy every way. Just, I don't know what I was trying to do, just trying to feel better. And so I worked, I'm a dental hygienist, I worked a professional job for quite a few years. And and then that invisible line, like where you go from drinking and or using to next thing you know, you're an alcoholic or an addict. Like, I don't quite know where. And it doesn't happen for everybody. Some people just do their thing, do it hard, and then quit. Or But I definitely, definitely crossed that line. I was in a relationship. I had met somebody, you know, another. I was so sick, so, you know, I'm picking sick. So I picked the sickest person I can find in this bar one night, and I'm sure nobody could relate to that. And decided I would, you know, try to rescue them, you know, because I was doing so well myself, and they seemed down and out. So that's my little MO, you know, I'm going to scrape you up because I'm doing so good. So I don't feel so bad about myself. And I got in a relationship with this girl, and later to find out she's using some substance. And rather than me, like, running the other direction, you know, after I saw the whole picture, you know, of course I joined in, and I was so miserable in my life, which was probably good. I just didn't realize it. I had my own apartment, and I had a professional job and bank accounts and vehicle and family, but I just, something was missing. I was just so empty, and so I went to this excitement, and it was very exciting for a minute, and hanging around people that I'd never hung around before, and like I was telling my good friend earlier in the back there, I'm not judgmental, but from how I was raised to what I had become was pretty crappy, really crappy. And I was thinking about that the other day. I don't quite realize how scary that was till I reflect, because I don't feel like that anymore about myself. But I was hanging out with some pretty scary-ass people, and it was hard for me to see that I was an alcoholic because they were all doing things that were worse than me. You know, they were just further along in this thing, and they, you know, they had been to jail, and I had not been caught, just all these things. So I surrounded myself with these scary, freaky people, and that's all I wanted to be with, and learn to do what they do, and, you know, and I basically got psychotic. I got crazy and psychotic, and went to get some help, finally. And I did a lot of that, like, compare me to you, like, well, you know, I'm not drinking as much as so-and-so, you know, so I really don't need to go to treatment, or, you know, I don't need to go to a halfway house, I have a bank account, I have a car, and I have resources, you know, all that minimizing of what I was doing. But the truth was, the folks that I was partying with, they were... they might have been doing worse stuff, but they were, for some reason, handling their business, and I was falling apart really quickly. I stand up here today. I weighed half of what I weigh today. I mean, I know I'm overweight, but I weighed half, and I'm a girl that likes to eat. So, pretty much, I was dying. Like I was dying. I was, you know, I didn't want to dress up. I was completely opposite of who I am today. And so I basically feel like I was going to hell quickly, and I've always been the type of person, I believe in divine intervention. I didn't have, and I still really don't have, friends and family that come and rush and rescue me and enable me, which has really saved my life, that nobody's like enabled me. So if I'm in trouble, I have to pick my ass up and do it myself, or you know, or pray to God and get some support. But people have never, you know, enabled my way. And so that's been a huge gift, because in my sobriety, it makes me very willing. And just in my life, period, it makes me feel that I need to be responsible for my recovery instead of somebody else doing it. And so I went to a detox at Northside Hospital a long time ago, and they, of course, suggested I go to a halfway house. I said, no way. So I stayed home, and I went to an outpatient program, and that wasn't enough for me. I needed to be physically away from everything. I had to be physically away from the people I was using and drinking with, and because I needed to be locked up. So I relapsed, and I couldn't stay sober more than, I don't know, 30 days, 60 days. And I finally was willing to get further help. And my job at the time let me have a leave of absence. And so I went to detox, and I tried to manipulate my whole way there. And probably only needed detox for like a week, but I tried to, you know, stay 30 days and then just go right back to work. But I got conned, and they talked me into going to treatment, inpatient, which saved my life at in South Georgia, Talbot. So that was the beginning of my recovery, and I tell my sponsee Noelle, and I'm sure she's tired of hearing it, but I had to hit bottom, and I believe in hitting bottoms in recovery. I mean, constantly, because it doesn't matter like if you're sick of me or my behavior. If there's still a payoff, I'm still going to do what it is I'm doing. And when I went to the treatment center, it was not a religious place, but I found a higher power there, and I found willingness there. And I was very spoiled. I mean, I had felt like I was a spoiled child, so I would, you know, make a tantrum and stomp off when I don't get what I want. And I did that a lot, and I did that at the treatment center. And I mean, I wasn't locked in; I could have left, but I'm glad I stayed. The longer I went against my will, the more help I got. So I stayed in this fancy place, and I didn't have any money. They scholarshiped me, which was doesn't even happen really with that kind of fancy place. But they let me stay there for about 13, 14 weeks, and then I later on paid them off. And then I went to a place called Turnaround. I think Turnaround is still open. And went to three-quarter house there. And then, of course, as soon as I got there, I was trying to con, and immediately got in a relationship, like in 2 days or whatever that's called. And I got kicked out of that place eventually. I eventually got in recovery for my sex and relationship addiction, and I went to 12-step program, worked all 12 steps in that, and occasionally I go to meetings for like a tune-up. Doesn't sound like a good word, but just in case I'm a little wayward in that area. I am in a relationship with that girl back there walking to the coffee. I 13-step her. I had 10 years, and she had 4 months, so it's not really a good idea, but it did happen. We're still sober today. But I got in recovery for that. I slowly got in real recovery with Alcoholics Anonymous. Eventually, I did a lot of fellowshipping early on because I was a lot younger and flirty and all that crap. And inappropriate, and so, you know, who wants to do step work? Who wants to work on yourself when you're, you know, busy getting loaded off of that kind of attention? So I wait until I was hurt, you know, having more pain in my life, and then as I had more pain, then I was more willing to do steps. And so I finally got sponsors, and I finally did step work. And then the longer I've been sober, the more willing I've become. I have two sponsors now, and they both have a lot of sobriety time, and they both have things that I really like. And I have a few sponsees. I don't have a zillion sponsees. I don't really get down like that. I just like to spend real time with people, maybe 3 or 4 ladies, not, you know, a lot. I like to do service work. I take a meeting to the prison, the women's prison, one day a month, and I'm really proud of that. There's nobody else from Atlanta that comes out there, so I don't know how I got so lucky, but I go and meet some friends from Athens, and we have this awesome meeting with these women, and once a month, and It's a little scary. It's a maximum security prison, but I love it, and I, believe it or not, feel kind of safe in there with them. And I don't know, do all kind of normal, regular stuff these days. I do have, let's see, I don't know, a year ago, my sweet, wonderful niece had a problem with addiction. And so I really learned what powerless was, because luckily she's here tonight. She's beautiful, healthy. But I tried to shove all my recovery, you know, down her throat. Well, you know, you're like, family can't really get family sober, but it was heartbreaking. So it got to the point where we weren't getting along at all. And then she started to do well without me. She started to grow and flourish without my help. And that was a really painful lesson, but it was a really important lesson in powerless. Like, I can carry the message. I can't carry the person. I can't get certain people sober or make you drink. I mean, I have a lot to offer, but people are going to get it the way they need to get it. And so that was really a really hard lesson, a really good lesson though. But we're really close today. I love her so much. I came to this program really fearful, and I still have a lot of fears, but I'm a lot better than I used to be. They taught me to compare me to me, you know, not like how I look to somebody else. And so compared to how I was when I got here, I've had a lot of growth. I also have outside issues. I have depression, so I seek outside help for that. And AA couldn't do that for me, but AA is part of my healing with that. I lost my job. I had a job for 20 years, same place. That it was a great job, but it was a mean boss, and I couldn't leave on my own. I don't know. I didn't have the guts or whatever the hell the problem was. And I have computer illiteracy issues. And anyway, she fired me in November, and I thought, like, I would die. I thought I was going to be homeless. That was the real truth. I thought, if I don't work for this lady, I'm going to be on the street with all this sobriety and be a big loser. And that didn't happen. My brother is a dentist, and he helped me out some. And then a friend, a sponsee, who was in my life for a short time, because she's still drinking, I think, had a lot of great computer skills and helped get my resume together and all that. So now I'm actually today I was offered a full-time job at my part-time job that I accepted. And so that's been like a whole new life for me. Like, again, you know, I talk about bottoms. I can't learn what I can learn until I'm there, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. So, so that's really awesome, because I'm not afraid. I realize now I am employable, you know, no matter what my age or whatever. And I am valuable, and I started to lose sight of that for many years in sobriety. I've done a lot of growing in sobriety. I've done a lot of, like, the next wrong shit. Early on, they talk about, you know, stay away, playgrounds, playmates, whatever. Don't go around the people you drank with, you use, whatever. You know, of course, I did completely the opposite of that and relapsed. And they talked about, there's nowhere in the big book that says stay out of a relationship for a year. I never, ever did that, like, never for 5 minutes. So I'm still alive, but it's a good idea to probably give a little space, but I can't even speak on that because I never did it, and I was never willing to do it. But I don't know, just lots of blessings. I love to cook. I love to travel. I like to laugh, and I'm a shopaholic. I eat too much. I don't know. Very imperfect, but I'm having a great time. Having a great time in my sobriety. And I've led book studies. I've done all kind of stuff. right now, my sponsor and I, we're going to this roundup event every month before the actual roundup, and I like to make fun of circuit speakers because, like, they seem to be performing and, like, something horrible happens, and now, like, they own the company, or they never could read, now they're teaching. I don't know. I just get on my damn nerves. But, and the reason I say that is because I have a long time sober, and my life is very real. You know, it's up and it's down, and it's everything. It's not like, oh, wow, this, you know, she couldn't use the computer, and now she, you know, created a new computer. You know, that's not gonna, it's not gonna be my story ever. But the 545 here at NABBA is my home group. I also attend a lot of different meetings, and I'm happy to share my experience, strength, and hope with everybody tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. One of the things I love best about Lisa is that she's really serious about recovery but doesn't take herself too seriously, and that encourages me to do the same, that Rule 52 thing. And I've asked Lauren to come up and give out the chips.
Hi, my name is Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. Hello. Thanks for asking me to give out the chips. Here at this 8 o'clock speakers meeting, we have a chip system. We mark our time in sobriety with chips. And the first chip we offer is a white chip. It's to signify surrender, to come in for the first time and not drink for 24 hours, or coming back. Does anyone need a white chip? Anyone else need a white chip? Okay, the second chip is silver, and it's for 30 days. If you have 30 days without drinking, come on up. Very good. Is there someone else who has 30 days in a row? All right. Congratulations. Excellent. Anyone else with 30 days for a silver chip? The next chip is red chip. It's for 3 months. Does anyone have 3 months sobriety? All right. 6 months of sobriety for a yellow chip. There's nothing yellow about for 6 months. Okay. Green chip is for 9 months. Does anyone need a green chip for 9 months of sobriety? Green. A blue chip is for multiple, or for year or multiple thereof. A AA birthday, working on it. Okay, keep coming back. And we offer the white chip one more time. Everyone deserves a second chance. Anyone for a white chip? Okay, thank God for the chips you hold.
Thanks, Lauren. And thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Just another homesick child, tired of running wild, ready to stand trial and move on. Though I'm guilty in your sight, have some mercy tonight. I can't make it through this fight all alone. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it all out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. As I try to make some sense of this world I'm up against, well, I know my best defense is your love. When the struggle gets its day and the lessons fall of pain, keep me calling out your name with love.
But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. From the bottom of my heart, and I'm searching for one star to shine. I will shout from mountain high, and I'll reach into the sky, till you open up my eyes so blind. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt.